And joining me right now here on the Mark Moses Show, this guy does a great job with Brevard Sports Network. And yeah, he joins us every Tuesday. He's my good friend, Alan Slaughter-Zinsky. Alan, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mark. And let me just say on behalf of Brevard, welcome back and glad you're back on the air.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. It was not fun over the last couple of weeks. I was not doing well. I'm doing better now. So and it's good hearing from you, because if you're on, I know we're going to be talking some sports. But there's something very sad that happened this morning in your home city of Baltimore. What happened exactly, buddy?
Well, it looked like a container cargo ship lost power and hit a pylon on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and the entire bridge collapsed. And, wow, you know, I'm always up that time of the night, and I got an alert on my phone because I get alerts from up in that area because I've got family there. My daughter lives there. And so I turned on the news up there, and I couldn't believe what I was watching. I absolutely could not believe it. You know, that is a bridge that, you know, I tell you, Mark, is the first thing I thought of when I saw it was what had happened in Tampa many years ago at the Skyway Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, they're still searching or looking for people in the water. They had construction crew on the bridge at the time. And that's a major, major, major artery over the Baltimore that it goes over the Patapsco River there. For the Baltimore Beltway. So I don't know what they're going to do in terms of traffic. It's going to be a mess up there, obviously, for quite some time.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, obviously, thoughts and prayers to all of those that are affected by this.
Okay, I want to clarify this. So is that bridge, is it like right by the, like you're taking 95 north-south? Where is it?
Yeah, well, so it is really right before you get to the 95 north-south cutoff from the Baltimore Beltway. It's actually part of I-695, which the Baltimore Beltway surrounds Baltimore County, Baltimore City, much like 495 surrounds D.C. and Virginia. So, it is an entire portion of I-695 gone, and you can't get across the Patapsco River on I-695 now. You'll have to go through the Baltimore tunnels to do that and come all the way back around. It's going to create a lot of traffic issues. It's going to create a lot of headaches. And, it was a shock to see that happen. Obviously, as a kid growing up and an adult, I traveled the bridge many, many, many a times in my life. My family uses it, obviously, and you know, I guess if there's one thing that you could say that, you know, is the time that this happened. It happened at 1:30 in the morning, and it didn't happen during a rush hour. So,
oh yeah,
I guess if you could be thankful for anything, it would be that, because if that had happened at, say, any time from 2 to 6 o'clock, oh my goodness, Mark, the measure of that tragedy, it would be unspeakable.
Thank you for chiming in on this, because I know that you grew up in that area. It's a very sad story. We're here at the Alan Slaughter-Zinsky Brevard Sports Network. All right, let's go to the tournament. I know you're doing your bracket challenge with Brevard Sports Network. My thoughts for you are, this is a different tournament. I don't feel like we have Cinderella's alive. I feel like it's all the big boys are still going. What's your impression for the first two rounds?
I couldn't agree with you more, Mark Moses. I wrote Sunday night, after I watched the last game Sunday night, how just strange it is to look up and see all four number ones and all four number twos. There are 2-3 seeds, 2-4 seeds, 2-5 seeds, 1-6, and an 11, buddy. And that's it. And the 11 seed isn't like, you know, some school we've never heard of. It's not St. Peter's or UMBC.
Yeah.
It's North Carolina State. And, you know, so, yeah, I'm very excited about this coming weekend because the matchups, Mark, that we're going to get are incredible. And I find it fascinating, too, that you look at, you know, like the Big 12 and the SEC, and you see that combined those two conferences send 16 teams to the conference or to the tournament. And I mean, the SEC, Mark, has had an atrocious tournament. I mean, granted, you still have two seeds alive. You know, you got Tennessee, you've got Alabama. But, I mean, you look at, you know, the losses by Kentucky to Oakland should have never happened. South Carolina's 14-point loss to number 11 Oregon. You know, Michigan State's 15-point win over Mississippi. You know, and Auburn losing to number 13 Yale. You know, I mean, this is a – and this all happened in round one, Mark. So this has been a bad, bad tournament for the SEC. And Kentucky, you know, listen, John Calipari's got some questions to answer. You know, he has not taken a team to the Sweet 16 since 2019. They're upset in Lexington, and they have every right to be.
Is NC State, who won five games in 5 days, now won two games in the tournament, are they on a Cinderella run, even though they're in the ACC?
Yeah, they're the best shot that anybody has in terms of a lower seed. Look, you know, maybe in a weird way, Mark, at a five seed, it could be Gonzaga as well.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Gonzaga. This is their ninth straight trip to the Sweet 16. And this was really one of these original Cinderella teams, right? It was Gonzaga that made that push every year. I mean, since 2015, they've been a 2-11, a 1-4, a 1-1, 1-3, and now a 5. And so even at a 5 here, you're looking at them and you're going, okay, maybe this is the year. You know, the thing that we say about Gonzaga every year is maybe this is their year. I don't know. Maybe this is it. I was impressed with the way they played over the weekend. I'll tell you, though, the team that really impressed me was Duke and how they handled James Madison. I had James Madison beating Duke in that round of 32, and Duke just wiped them off the planet. I mean, that was not a game from the moment they tipped that ball off to the moment the final whistle sounded. I love the way that Duke is playing. I like the way that North Carolina is playing. And I think that when you look at the ACC as a whole, Mark, other than the fact that Virginia loses in the play-in game of this tournament, they're 8-1. They're 8-1 in this tournament. And ACC basketball, Mark, is alive and well.
All right. Here are my thoughts, and I want to get your opinion on this. We're here at the Alan Sauter-Zinsky Brevard Sports Network. We used to live in that world of Calipari you were bringing up a second ago, the one and done, right? You get the NBA prospects, you can go on a run. Now I think with the transfer portal, you have veteran basketball players jumping ship to other veteran teams. And it's kind of one of these things where, okay, some of these big boys, like you said, Creighton and Duke, and you could say Illinois and all these other ones, now they have depth and they have veterans on their team and they're even better. And maybe that's what's going to be the new landscape. Do you feel that way?
Of course. And you don't have to look any further than Connecticut, Mark, to see this. Connecticut loses two outstanding talented basketball players from their team last year, right? But they immediately fill the void with players who Danny Hurley has groomed, coached, and taught. You know what I mean? So, yes, it appears to me that the time of the one and done could be, for lack of a better term, done, so to speak. It looks to me, and yes, you're right, with the transfer portal, that the teams where guys have been playing college basketball for 3 and 4 years, and the teams that have stayed together and are playing together, those are the teams that are excelling in an atmosphere like the NCAA tournament.
Who do you have in your final four, buddy?
Well, unfortunately, I had Kentucky. They're gone. My national champ is Purdue. I had North Carolina, and I think Illinois was the other final 14.
I have UConn, Houston, Creighton, and Arizona. So I'm still alive, which will probably die in a couple days. But, I have UConn over Houston. That's my championship game. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. You're absolutely right. Did you sit around for 4 days and watch the tournament?
Of course. It's all I did. And I'll do it again this weekend. And I'm excited to do it. Yeah, absolutely. I already know I am. So don't call me anybody out there looking for streams. It ain't happening.
You bring up Calipari. He's owed about $30 million. I honestly, I know you can go back and forth on this. I think you need new blood there. I think you need a new guy in charge of Kentucky basketball.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and during that, you know, listen, when he got there, obviously prior to him, I can't remember the coach that got fired the year before he got there, but obviously Tubby Smith did a hell of a job there. But when Calipari took over in his first 10 years, Mark, you know, he won two national championships. I think he was, you know, in eight of his first 10 years, it was the Elite Eight or better for him. And yeah, I mean, listen, you can, you're a blue blood like Kentucky. You cannot not go to the Sweet 16 in the past three tournaments.
It's going to be a tough one for Kentucky. I think you bring them back, but I just, you know what it is? It reminds me of Florida, where, all right, this Todd Golden guy is young, but I think it's something the Gators needed. They need some new guy. And you were bringing up the SEC a second ago. You know the Gators scored 100 points in the game they lost to Colorado. How does that happen? You scored 100.
You know, the Gators, you know, outside of Tennessee, because I thought Tennessee played well. I thought Alabama played well. But, you know, the Gators, considering what they had went through as a team, you know, losing their starting center, I really thought they played well. I did. And you know, I didn't like their matchup going into that one at all. I just didn't. You know, being a seven seed in a tournament is, you know, you're never granted any gifts as a seven seed because, you know, your 10 seed's always going to be a good basketball team. But I thought all in all, what we saw from Florida this year was some of the games that they won, that run that they made through the SEC tournament. I thought it was a pretty successful year for Gator basketball.
From where they were under Mike White, I agree with you 100%. And the standard, it's funny, you bring up Kentucky. What's the standard? The standard of Florida is you should be a top 25 program and you should be in the tournament every year. That's my standard. Yeah. What about you?
I agree. And the good news is as long as nobody repeats as national champions, the Gators will continue to be mentioned year in and year out.
I understand. We hear the Al Sauterzinski. All right. I want your thoughts on baseball. This Shohei Ohtani story is just very bizarre. And everyone keeps coming up to me like, what's going on with Ohtani? I know he talked yesterday. What is your take on what's going on with the new star of the Dodgers?
Well, I think there's either two things at play here. I think either Shohei Ohtani is the worst manager of money in the history of Major League Baseball, or Shohei Ohtani's interpreter was a front man for him. And I don't think it could be anything else.
Yes.
I'd be willing to bet that Shohei Ohtani is a pretty good manager of money, Mark. So I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here and say that Shohei Ohtani's interpreter was a front man. And listen, Major League Baseball has got a real problem here, a real problem. And if you watched the national talking heads yesterday, Mark, it was hardly mentioned at all. And I, you know, even when Ohtani gave his press conference at 2:45 yesterday, which I thought he knocked out of the park, so I'm still not sold, but I thought he did a good job in it. And here's the other thing, you know, first of all, A, Shohei Ohtani can speak English. That's the other thing, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, he can speak English, Mark. His interpreter doesn't, you know, it's every step, every day, Mark, we are going to find something out about this process and about what's occurred. It's going to implicate Ohtani more and more and more and more. I'm sorry. I love Shohei Ohtani. You couldn't find a bigger advocate locally last year, you know, in talking sports than me with Ohtani. But as far as I'm concerned, he used his interpreter as a front man for $4.5 million worth. Mark, no bookie, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know this from experience, but I know this just because I do. No bookie is going to allow a front man a $4.5 million line. Do you feel me?
Yes. This whole offseason has been bizarre, Alan. And it started with him signing with the Dodgers and then deferring the money for whatever it is, 10, 15 years from now, for over $600 million of it. Like, what? And then about a month ago, remember, we had the story, oh, yeah, he got married. What? What do you mean he got married? Oh, yeah, he just got married. And then there's this story. And then remember, he changed the story originally with what was the, oh, well, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. Like, what the hell's going on here? If this guy gambled, then he's getting the Pete Rose treatment. I'm sorry if this is true.
Well, two things will happen with this, Mark, I feel. Will Major League Baseball give Ohtani the Pete Rose treatment once all of this plays out? Or is it time to change the rules and say, no, you still can't bet on baseball. But you know, Pete's not coming back because he bet on baseball. Whatever you want to say, if it's found that Shohei Ohtani bet on baseball, he's got to go. He's got to go. But if he didn't bet on baseball, what do you do? What do you do here?
I don't think someone was telling me this earlier. I don't think sports betting's legal in California either. With what he's doing. Look, dude, if I'm missing $500 from my bank account, Mark Moses knows this. So the fact that Ohtani, oh, I didn't know where $4 million was, just still is a head scratcher to me, Alan.
Yeah, hey, 500, buddy. If you and I are missing $50, we're looking.
So wild.
Okay.
All right.
You know,
he's the big winner, the L.A. Angels of Anaheim, where they got rid of Ohtani.
Absolutely, man. I mean, absolutely, because you know exactly what the storyline would be right now, right? Well, the Angels had an opportunity to get rid of him or let him go, and they didn't do it. They decided to sign him. And is it even possible, Mark Moses, that the Angels already knew this information and said, yeah, let him go?
If he gets, like, some ban, I know these are all hypotheticals because it's all out there right now. Is there a way the Dodgers could void the contract where they don't have to pay him the money?
If they could prove that, I would think so, Mark. I mean, if they could prove that, and obviously this did take place before he signed the contract, I would absolutely think they could void that contract.
This is a bizarre story. How come you don't have an interpreter that's really your front man? Come on, Alan.
Well, because I have no need to speak Japanese, Mark.
Dude, opening day is like this weekend.
I cannot wait, Mark.
Yeah, because you've been waiting for your Orioles to get back on the field, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have expectations to win 100 games again?
Well, I'm a little concerned about the Orioles pitching staff this year. We got Corbin Burns, Cy Young Award winner from a couple of years ago with the Brewers. But I'm a little concerned about the pitching in the bullpen. But listen, you know, the Orioles still have three of the top 15 prospects, including the number one and the number eight overall prospect in Major League Baseball that didn't crack the opening day lineup. And, you know, Jackson Holliday, of course, was the big spring training story. He batted over 300. He hit three home runs. And everybody assumed that he was going to be on the opening day roster. And Mike Elias said, no, he's going to go back to Rochester. He's 20 years old. He's played in 18 AAA games. He went 2-for-14 against left-handed pitching in spring training. He needs some more time. And I think the bigger story, if you're a Baltimore Orioles fan, is the death of Peter Angelos, the Orioles owner.
I saw that.
Yeah, you know, the big story there is, you know, I've told you many a times and I've told you on your show many a times, Peter Angelos absolutely destroyed this wonderful franchise that was the winningest, the Orioles were the winningest team in baseball from 1965, Mark, all the way up until the late 80s. Angelos took it over in 93, and it's been one of the losingest franchises under his tenure. The only thing that he really did was to, you know, keep Camden Yards up and keep that beautiful ballpark going. But now David Rubenstein takes over the Rubenstein Group. And when the Angelos family sold the team, Mark, it was written into the deal that they still own 60% of the team until the death of Peter Angelos. Well, when Peter died Saturday, David Rubenstein is now 100% majority owner of the Baltimore Orioles. And look, you know, rest in peace, Peter. You know, I don't know what kind of a man you were. I can tell you what kind of an owner he was. He was one of the worst in sports. But you know, it's still no reason to be cruel to a man that's passed. God bless him. God bless his family. But now the Orioles will move forward on Thursday, opening day, with a brand new, fantastic ownership group, one of the best young baseball teams in Major League Baseball. And I think the future is extremely, extremely bright for the Orioles.
You going to be wearing all Baltimore stuff? Is that the key?
Yeah. I got it on right now. I got five jerseys. I got five Oriole jerseys, and the goal was to wear one every day this week. And I'm in day two. Today I got the white, just the right Orioles jersey on. Tomorrow it's the Baltimore road gray jerseys, and on opening day it'll be the city black Baltimore jerseys.
You're ready. Before I let you go, all right, with Brevard Sports Network, are you calling baseball games this week? What's up?
Yeah, we got some spring break tournament action tonight. We'll be down in Palm Bay tonight. We got two games there. And then tomorrow I'm going to hit the road, go about 90 miles north up to Daytona Beach and Jackie Robinson Stadium, where the Daytona Tortugas play. And I'm going to broadcast the Vieira Hawks in a spring break tournament up there tomorrow.
That'll be really cool. And by the way, I like when you guys do those Vieira games at the Space Coast Stadium. That's really cool, dude. You guys get to do
that. Fun to watch.
Yeah, it really is cool. Are we, all right, do we have to go see your Orioles play this summer when they come here?
Yeah, we're gonna go to Miami, and you and I are going to talk about that, because they play three games down in Miami in July, and I think, I want to go. I obviously don't want to go by myself, so
okay.
I don't know anybody else that knows the city of Miami as Mark Moses does. So I think the perfect companion on that trip, I'll buy the tickets, and we go.
You saw the Bright Line. That's going to be in Cocoa. So are we going to do, like, will that be the norm for us? Would you get on that train and then we can go to Miami?
We'll go to Cocoa two times a week, Mark, and catch that train down to, and I already read up on it. You know, they offer free shuttles to where the Dolphins play.
Yeah.
It's a six minute Uber drive to where the Marlins play. So yes, when that was one of the biggest things of my recent life, when they announced that stop for Brightline in Cocoa.
See, it'll be interesting, and this is going to take a couple years. All right, it'll be at Cocoa, and then it'll go, you know, it goes to the airport in Orlando. Then you know there's going to be a stop at Disney World. So you're going to go that way.
Right.
I want it, what I really want, get me the train that can take me to Tampa so I don't have to be stuck in traffic on 4. That would be cool as well. And then it's all connected.
Well, you know, eventually what they need to do is run that thing from Jacksonville to Tampa to Miami. That would be the key.
Yeah. That would be cool. No, all of it would be awesome. And, dude, I've told you this. I've taken it. I've gotten on it West Palm Beach, and I took it all the way to downtown Miami, and I went to the Heat game. It was really cool. It's going to be awesome. So
I'm excited, man. I really am. I'm looking forward to it. And I don't like to drive anymore. I think you, of all people, know this.
Okay.
I mean, how many events have I not gone to because I don't want to drive? And so, yeah, I'm excited about this.
Alan Slaughter-Zinsky, Brevard Sports Network. Thanks for your help, and have a great day.
Mark, I appreciate you, and great to have you back, buddy.